Following are comments on William Shakespeare's Macbeth, Act 5. More needs she the divine than the physician. Lady Macbeth has finally cracked under the strain of her terrible crime, and her gentlewoman and a doctor observe the obsessive hand-washing and involuntary sleepwalking that now plague her. In Act 5, Scene 1, Lady Macbeth has been driven mad by guilt, and today, observing her futile hand-washing routine, we would say unpoetically that she has contamination obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. As an assistant and a doctor listen in, the queen asks nobody in particular, quote-unquote, who would have thought the old man to have had so much blood in him? Act 5, Scene 1, lines 34 through 35. Her hand-washing, too, reveals a psychic derangement. She cannot expunge her guilt, but feels compelled to keep trying. The lady's final utterance of the night is, quote-unquote, I tell you yet again, Banquo's buried. He cannot come out on his grave. Act 5, Scene 1, lines 56 through 57. It's as if even in her madness, Lady Macbeth is still trying to buck up the spirits of her terror-afflicted husband. But the time for that has long since passed. The doctor admits his frustration, saying to the gentlewoman, quote-unquote, more needs she the divine than the physician. Act 5, Scene 1, line 67. But he must stay silent in this authoritarian Scotland under Macbeth. What is the point of showing Lady Macbeth's insanity, a psychological problem, when the supernatural agents who set the stage for disaster seem real enough? Well, Macbeth is not a pure psychodrama, but the witches are not causes of human evil. They only assist forces already working within Macbeth and his queen. What affects Lady Macbeth in the private psychological sphere plays out for Macbeth in the broader public sphere of kingship. Action, battles, and machinations constitute the usurper king's attempt to scrub his hands and conscience clean. And even after there's no further need for that, because he has in effect killed his conscience, his busy efforts at least power him through to his furious but futile struggle at the end of the play, vainly clutching the power he has won, but that is now being wrenched away from him. Macbeth greets the end with his sword, repeating the same pattern to the bitter end. Lady Macbeth's path to the everlasting bonfire is different, as befits a traditionalist inflection of her gender's circumstances and capacities. It seems from the insanity leading to her death that she is doomed to suffer as one of legions of Simone de Beauvoir's inessential others, so-called. She is mostly restricted from the sphere of action and authority so freely accessed by her powerful husband, and so she is forced along the road to hell's gaping entrance by the tricks her stifled mind and soul play upon her. Now does he feel his title hang loose about him. As avenging Scottish and English forces converge on Birnam Wood, Menteith and Caithness conjecture about Macbeth's present actions and emotions. In Act 5, Scene 2, Menteith, Caithness, Lennox, and Angus head for Birnam Wood, where they will combine with the English forces led by Malcolm, Siward, and Macduff. Macbeth is fortifying Dunsinane. Angus offers a memorable image, quote-unquote. Now does he feel his title hang loose about him like a giant's robe upon a dwarfish thief. Act 5, Scene 2, lines 20 through 22. Till Birnam Wood removed to Dunsinane I cannot taint with fear. Macbeth taunts his still-coming attackers and tries to firm up his resolve. But his private reflections indicate that he no longer has the spiritual energy to defend his power. In Act 5, Scene 3, Macbeth's opponents are marching towards Birnam Wood, but the deluded king still claims he leads a witch-charmed life. He therefore scorns all those who would abandon him, taunting them at one point, quote unquote, "Then fly, false thanes, and mingle with the English epicures." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 7 through 8. His security, quote unquote, "Till Birnam Wood remove to Dunsinane, I cannot taint with fear." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 2 through 3. But Macbeth's claims ring hollow, and he finally admits to himself, quote unquote, "I have lived long enough. My way of life has fallen into the sere, the yellow leaf, and that which should accompany old age as honor, love, obedience, troops of friends, I must not look to have." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 22 through 26. The words are beautiful, but they ring hollow, unrelated to action. This man really is tired of living. The crown he stole is no longer worth the trouble it takes to maintain, even if there's no sense trying to give it back. Still, Macbeth resolves to steel himself in violence, saying to his attendant, the aptly named Satan, spelled S-E-Y-T-O-N, quote unquote, "I'll fight till from my bones my flesh be hacked." Act 5, Scene 3, line 33. This is the kind of determination that stems from despair. One almost wants to say apathy, though acedia, spelled A-C-E-D-I-A, spiritual sloth, is more accurate. Macbeth's sorry treatment of the servant who gives him the news about Birnam Wood perhaps reveals more about his true state of mind than his elegant words at this point in the play. "Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased?" Macbeth ponders the terrible madness that has destroyed Lady Macbeth and recognizes that there is nothing in the doctor's art that can cure her. Still in Act 5, Scene 3, occupied with his own thoughts and preparations for battle, among them a servant's warning that 10,000 of the enemy are on their way to Dunsinane, Macbeth has remained distant from his wife's sufferings, but now he makes time to reflect on her and them. Lady Macbeth is gravely ill. Macbeth asks the puzzled, fearful physician, quote unquote, "Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased?" Can the doctor not, by his best skill, quote unquote, "pluck from the memory a rooted sorrow"? Can he not, quote unquote, "raise out the written troubles of the brain from the sufferer"? Act 5, Scene 3, lines 40 through 42. No, alas, the doctor's skill does not encompass such a miracle when, as he had earlier said, this patient needs not a doctor, but a priest. It's too late now. Lady Macbeth is far gone in her madness. The doctor gives the king an evasive answer, saying, quote unquote, "Therein the patient must minister to himself." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 45 through 46. In response, Macbeth angrily rejects doctoring altogether, quote unquote, "Throw physic to the dogs, I'll none of it." Act 5, Scene 3, line 47. What good is an art or science that heals only physical maladies when the patient's troubles are of the spiritual or psychic kind? As for his own situation, Macbeth believes the witch's charms will hold steady, and he repeats that charm at scene's end, just as he started the scene with it. Quote unquote, "I will not be afraid of death and bane till Birnam Forest come to Dunsinane." Act 5, Scene 3, lines 59 through 60. The exact formulation of the thought at both ends of the scene is worth noting. Macbeth says he will not fear till, or until, Birnam Forest does its magic and comes to high Dunsinane Hill. When he first heard the third apparition make that statement in Act 4, Scene 1, Macbeth responded with glee. Quote unquote, "That will never be. Who can impress the forest, bid the tree unfix his earthbound root?" Act 4, Scene 1, lines 93 through 95. But now he seems to suspect that it just might happen. His present choice of construction suggests, "I'll believe that when I see it." Macbeth's feeling of certitude may be slipping away from him, like his grip on power. Let every soldier hew him down a bough and bear it before him. Malcolm orders each of his soldiers to cut a branch from a tree in Birnam Wood to confuse Macbeth's forces as to the number of his attackers. In Act 5, Scene 4, we find that Birnam Wood really is coming to Dunsinane, even though we and Macbeth are not witnessing a violation of the laws of nature, as the witch's phrasing led us to believe. It's happening all the same as a piece of clever military strategy. The royal lad Malcolm's tactic is meant to obscure the attacker's numbers from Macbeth's defensive forces. She should have died hereafter. As he prepares for a siege to his castle, Macbeth marks the death of his queen and arrives at the nothingness of his depraved quest for power. In Act 5, Scene 5, Macbeth is convinced that he is beyond the reach of massed troops. Quote unquote, "Our castle's strength will laugh a siege to scorn." Act 5, Scene 4, lines 2 through 3. He has, quote unquote, "almost forgot the taste of fears." Act 5, Scene 4, line 9. But the announcement of Lady Macbeth's death leads him to a nihilistic place. He says simply, quote unquote, "She should have died hereafter." Act 5, Scene 5, line 17. But what does that mean? That she would have died anyway, or that she should not have died so soon? The first reading seems to align better with Macbeth's nihilistic turn in Act 5, but audiences must decide the meaning of the king's enigmatic words. Macbeth now speaks haunting lines, culminating in his description of life as a meaningless journey through, quote unquote, "tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow," or a play in which some, quote unquote, "poor player pounds the boards with effort to make his role meaningful, and then inevitably," quote unquote, "is heard no more." It's all, as Macbeth says, quote unquote, "a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." Act 5, Scene 4, lines 17 through 28 inclusive. So what was all his furious striving and, quote-unquote, "vaulting ambition" for, then? We know the 1960s hit song's famous lyric, quote-unquote, "war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing." The same goes for stealing a crown and then engaging in war to keep it. In the end, Macbeth has done no more than gut the higher purpose of his own life, and that of his wife. Lady Macbeth's prayer to the infernal spirits was to, quote-unquote, "unsex" her back in Act 1, Scene 5, and make her cruel and pitiless, that she might the better mold her husband's spirit to murder King Duncan and even assist him in the deed. Critics and audiences have sometimes admired her strength, but ultimately, her sad end here at Act 5, Scene 4 suggests the futility of her prayer. The model of manhood that she, no doubt partly borrowing from the sensibilities of her own time and culture, staked her fortunes on, was deeply flawed, even deranged, and in the end, it broke her. For that matter, it is Macbeth's willingness to adopt the same construction of masculinity that casts him into the abyss, too. That construction entails hardness, ruthlessness, willingness to take what one wants violently and unjustly, and then defend it the same way. Macbeth has not listened to the good counsel he gave Lady Macbeth in Act 1, Scene 7. Quote unquote, "I dare do all that may become a man. Who dares do more is none." Act 1, Scene 7, lines 46 through 47. The broader theological lesson underlying this sad tale of Macbeth and Lady Macbeth is almost trite, repeated as it has been so many times by preachers who take their cue from Mark chapter 8, verse 36. Quote unquote, "For what shall it profit a man, though he should win the whole world, if he lose his soul?" Geneva Bible, BibleGateway.com. As Macbeth himself had said about the witch's prediction favoring Banquo in the long run, quote unquote, "For Banquo's issue have I filed my mind," and quote unquote, "mine eternal jewel given to the common enemy of man to make them kings." Act 3, Scene 1, lines 65 and lines 68 through 70. "I gin to be aweary of the sun and wish the estate of the world were now undone. The movement of Birnam Wood to Dunsinane rattles Macbeth." He realizes now that he can take no certitude from anything the Weird Sisters have said, and all that's left is to fight and die. Still in Act 5, Scene 5, a messenger informs Macbeth about a certain forest on the move. The messenger is quite sure of it, saying, quote unquote, "Within this 3 mile you may see it coming, I say, a moving grove." Act 5, Scene 5, lines 37 through 38. Receiving this astonishing news, the king invites general decreation and destruction. Quote unquote, "I gin to be aweary of the sun and wish the estate of the world were now undone." Act 5, Scene 5, lines 49 through 50. He will fight and speak lovely lines like this, but his fine words are no more than hollowed out husks, like the man who speaks them. Language, too, has failed Macbeth. He can still speak with eloquence that moves us, but such eloquence can only deepen his own weariness with himself and all the world. Well then, Birnam Wood has come to High Dunsinane. Let it be so. Finally, Macbeth admits that he has lost his certitude, his security, quote-unquote, in the sense that Hecate lent that word in Act 4, Scene 1. A final command, quote-unquote, "Arm, arm, and out!" Act 5, Scene 5, line 46. The wicked king will leave the now illusory safety of a man in his high castle and go instead to fight Macduff, Malcolm, and their troops. Let us be beaten if we cannot fight. Siward sets an honest, warlike tone as his and Malcolm's forces reach Dunsinane Castle. In the very brief Act 5, Scene 6, Malcolm and Siward arrive in front of Dunsinane Castle. Malcolm orders the men to cast down their tree boughs hewn from Birnam Wood. It's time to fight. Siward and his son will lead the first wave of battle, and Malcolm and Macduff will do the rest. The end is now very near. Siward is matter of fact about the upcoming battle, saying only, quote unquote, "Let us be beaten if we cannot fight." Act 5, Scene 6, Line 8. "Be these juggling fiends no more believed that palter with us in a double sense." Macbeth's confidence gives way to desperation when he realizes that the Weird Sisters misled him. Macduff cuts him down in single combat, and Malcolm will be crowned king at Scone. In Act 5, Scene 7, Macbeth confidently kills young Siward and rejects classical honor suicide, choosing to direct violence at others. To his guilty consternation, the king is confronted by Macduff, who, as he explains in preparation for killing Macbeth, was, quote-unquote, "from his mother's womb untimely ripped, and therefore not, to use Macbeth's phrase, quote-unquote, of woman born." Act 5, Scene 7, line 43 and lines 45 through 46. Macbeth's courage now collapses, but still he assails the Weird Sisters with a bitter curse. Quote unquote, "Be these juggling fiends no more believed that palter with us in a double sense, that keep the word of promise to our ear and break it to our hope." Act 5, Scene 7, lines 49 through 52. Macbeth, the man of what the Greeks would call hubris, is duly slain by his pursuing antagonist, his nemesis, Macduff. In the end, the terms Macduff and others use to describe Macbeth strip him of humanity. A baited bear, a hellhound, Lady Macbeth, too, is described by Malcolm as, quote-unquote, fiend-like. Act 5, Scene 7, line 99. From the time of their first terrible deed onward, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth tried to kill all sentiment within themselves, and it seems fitting that the end of the play is anything but sentimental. Siward casts to nothing the right to mourn his son's death in battle, saying only, quote-unquote, "Had I as many sons as I have hairs, I would not wish them to a fairer death." Act 5, Scene 7, lines 78 through 79. Siward's is truly a medieval consciousness. He unflinchingly defines and judges his sons, not in terms of pure affection, but instead of propriety in fulfilling their obligations to their rulers and commanders. Malcolm promises to perform all the state necessaries in the proper way. The kingdom has been set right, and the emphasis is on order and ceremony, spare and fitting words. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Thursday, July 24th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from Macbeth, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.